Today on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
While it's absolutely true that God's grace is unconditional to us and that we're never earning it, we're never meriting it, it is also true that God works out, and we're going to see this morning, God works out his purposes in our lives. And one of the ways that he works out his purpose, when he has really gripped somebody in grace, one of the ways that he works out his purposes is to let their sin rebound on them.
It is indeed a unique side of the Lord that we'll explore today here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Welcome to our broadcast. We return to our series through Genesis, and today we find ourselves looking once again at Genesis, this time chapter 29, verses 1 through 30. Jacob has just heard from the Lord, and now he's on his way to find a wife. And all that ensues is what we discuss next. Here's Pastor Chris now with today's broadcast of Abounding Grace.
This is the word of the Lord. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and he saw a well in a field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. For out of that well the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large. And when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" They said, "We are from Haran." He said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" They said, "We know him." He said to them, "Is it well with him?" They said, "It is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." He said, "Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go, pasture them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep." While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are bone, my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to any other man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you've done to me? Did I not serve you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me?" Laban said, "It is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years." Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his female servant Bilhah to Rachel, to his daughter Rachel, to be her servant. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served Laban for another 7 years. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, "Because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, for now my husband will love me." She conceived again and bore a son, and said, "Because the Lord has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also." And she called his name Simeon. Again, she conceived and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will be attracted to me because I have bore him three sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah. Then she ceased bearing. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. In Ken Sandy's excellent book on peacemaking, he has a whole chart in there on how people are to respond and how people do respond to conflict. And you have three different categories of response when there's conflict in somebody's life. You have peacemaking responses where you're helping people and pursuing avenues of making peace. You have another major category of attack responses. But then you have one of the more common categories of responses when there is conflict with people, and it is escape responses. Under that category, you have three different ways that people generally escape from conflict. The first and the worst, well, one of the worst forms of that, and that is suicide. Another kind of response to conflict is simply to live in denial of it, and you stay away from it and never deal with it. But then there is one that I believe is the most common. The single great response to all conflict. What is it? Flight. Flight. People run at times of conflict. I mean, it's in many respects, it's just easy, isn't it? It's easy. They never have to deal with the consequences maybe of sin that has happened in life. How many of you know people or have loved ones who've run during major periods of conflict? Maybe you've tried this. Running is especially prominent in those who are the offenders. It's just easy to escape when you don't have to deal with the consequences of your actions. And then wherever you're going, it always looks more promising over there. It always looks easier over there. It's a better path, it seems, over there. Especially when you don't have to face the faces of those, maybe whom you've hurt. All of us have tried this at some point in life. Maybe some of you are contemplating it. One of the things that people, though, rarely stop and think about when they're running, when there's flight in their lives, is about the fact that the one to whom their lives really matter, the one to whom they have to give an account, the one who tells us that he never leaves us nor forsakes us, the one who in all of our running we can never escape from, is there the whole way, seeing it all, knowing it all, so that ultimately no one is ever really running. And that's really an important point this morning, because studying the life of Jacob, we're at a point that which in Genesis here, that this is exactly Jacob's response. This is exactly mom's and Jacob's response to the great scheme, the great plot, the great deception that had taken place at their house under the tent. And in the scene before us, what you have is Jacob fleeing the terrible consequences of his sin. He had, remember, boys and girls, tricked his older brother Esau, and he had done it deceiving dad in the night when his dad had dim eyes. And it was tragic. If any of that had happened in our families, can you imagine the chaos that would have caused? You're dealing with family inheritances. I mean, it would cause rage and anger. And sure enough, it did in Jacob's family. Esau had consoled himself that he would kill Jacob. Now, last time I made the case, I don't even think Jacob felt sorry about this whole thing yet. He's out in the wilderness alone. And what did God do? Well, he didn't come and slap Jacob around. He didn't come and beat him back to go deal with it right away, which is interesting, isn't it? There's a strange phrase there. I will be with you wherever you go. And you think, well, why are you letting him go outside the land? I'm not going to leave you, Jacob. I will bring you back, but first I'm going to let you run. But in the midst of all of this, the Lord drops a ladder down to him and tells him, gives him all of the promises of the Abrahamic covenant and showers down upon him grace and love and There was no rebuke in that passage, was there, from the Lord? He didn't come after him that way. I'm giving it all to you, Jacob. It's all yours. Wherever you go, I'm with you. I will do this for you. If you're reading this and you're listening to this and you're thinking about grace, it can be a little angering, can it? In other words, he steals the birthright. He deceives for the blessings. He trashes blind dad and runs from him. And that's what God does. God drops down a ladder and says, I'm with you. I love you. Well, the natural kind of response to that is talk about creating license. Talk about creating license to go do whatever you want to do. Is that really the message that we want to convey? That you know, you could get some people who want to run and say, well, that's not a bad option if that's how God's going to treat me. If God is that good and that gracious, well, then it doesn't really matter what I do. I might as well live it up. I'm thankful for this morning's message because it really does overturn all of that kind of thinking. While it's absolutely true that God's grace is unconditional to us and that we're never earning it, we're never meriting it, it is also true that God works out, and we're going to see this morning, God works out his purposes in our lives. And one of the ways that he works out his purpose, when he has really gripped somebody in grace, one of the ways that he works out his purposes is to let their sin rebound on them, to train us in repentance and faith. In other words, you want to see how God deals with sin in the life of the believer? You want to see how he's sanctifying? Do you want to see what he does? I don't know if there's a better passage that demonstrates that today, because Jacob just gets handled. And this should challenge us to see that when he promises to be with us, and he promises to save us, and he promises that he'll never leave us nor forsake us, that he's also promising to train us in righteousness, and that he's also promising to deal with past sins. We never escape it. Don't ever think if you're running, you'll get past it. God will force us to deal with it. And that's what I believe this passage is now showing us, that ultimately the Lord dropped the ladder to him, said, I'm with you wherever you go. And now ultimately what you're seeing happen in Genesis is the Lord beginning to work in this man's life. In a surprising way, in a surprising twist. I want to look at this week and here see what the Lord, how he is training him, and see how common providence the Lord is working to do what he said he would do. Last week, Jacob had met the Lord for the first time. The Lord introduced himself. And now we see the Lord immediately beginning to work. So Jacob now heads to Haran. He arises from Bethel and he goes on his journey. And if you look at verse 1, we read that he came to the land of the people of the east, and he looked and he saw a well in the field. And behold, there were 3 flocks of sheep by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. 3 flocks of shepherds are by this well. And there was this large stone, and when the flocks would be gathered, they would then have to take off this giant stone, and they would water the flocks, and then they would put the stone back. Jacob approaches all of these lazy shepherds. They're sitting around doing nothing. And he asks them if they know Laban. Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And the shepherds say, yes, we know him. He's well. And hey, look, Jacob, his daughter's coming right now. Again, you should all be seeing behind this, the Lord's working. So as the conversation is happening, here comes Rachel. She was a shepherdess, but the text is emphasizing here over and over and over appearance. Look down at verse 17. She was beautiful. It doesn't just say appearance. She was beautiful in form. He's studying curves. Her form was lovely. Now, she wasn't one of these anorexic models today. Back then, it might make the women feel better. Heavier was okay. She was something. Beautiful in form. He gazes upon her. He's studying. Verse 10. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, notice this. the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother. Jacob's come near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his brother's mother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel. Now, I have never seen so much energy from Jacob. I mean, what in the world just happened? He's out rolling stones now? A man, the only energy I saw from him was the energy in stealing something. And now here comes Rachel and he's watering herds. And we are immediately being set up here because we see that Jacob now has a desire. Jacob has something driving him for the first time in life, doesn't he? Something has actually got the attention of Jacob. Driven by something, I'm getting her. The text is important because this scene should remind us of something that happened back in chapter 24. There's a direct comparison going on here. It's prompting us to make this comparison. Remember what happened when Abraham's servant went to look for a bride for Isaac? He comes to the city of Nahor. This is what we read. He made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at the evening, the time when the women go out to draw water. And what did Abraham's servant do? Let's compare Jacob and compare this. Oh, Lord, God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of men of the city are coming out to draw water. And what did he ask of the Lord? Make clear to me a woman of godly character, the one that you choose, O Lord. And before he had even finished speaking, there's Rebecca. This is the same scene, coming with a pitcher and on her shoulder. And he didn't make a hasty decision even then. He watches her and he studies, and he's not studying curves. He's studying what's important. And remember, he wouldn't make that decision. He bowed his head and he worships the Lord. Do you see the contrast? This man prayed. This man looked. Jacob? Oh, he's a self-made man. Given to sensuality, his life is totally accustomed to getting what he wants his way. He's like a young person who doesn't care at all about the right thing and securing a spouse that pleases the Lord, but purely given to how they feel, how the person looks. No regard to the spiritual state of whether this person is godly, whether this person is of the Lord, whether this person is the one the Lord wants them to marry. Jacob is full of the sensual. Being sensual means you're, boys and girls, you're governed by your senses, whatever you feel. Jacob is the kind of mindset, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. Well, all of a sudden, we have a new figure introduced into the scene. Jacob meets Uncle Laban. This isn't the first introduction to Uncle Laban. Back in chapter 24, when Abraham's servant met Laban, remember what he said about Laban? Abraham's servant had put all sorts of gold nose rings on Rebecca and necklaces, all sorts of gold from Father Abraham. And as soon as Laban looks upon that, this is what happened back in chapter 24. So it came to pass when he saw, there's a connection. When he saw the nose rings and the bracelets on his sister's wrists, and when he heard the words of Rebekah, he said, "Come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house." Uncle Laban, he was as sensual with the best of them. Laban was governed by the senses. This was a greedy, money-hungry man, a schemer himself. And the text wants you to see, when he heard about Jacob, what happens? As soon as Rachel tells her father about Jacob, what do you read in verse 13? Laban hears the news about Jacob, his sister's son. He ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him into the house. Does that sound familiar? Here is a young prodigal running, and this father is running out to meet him. running, embracing, and kissing. Where else do you find that story? Jesus had a whole parable about two brothers, a younger brother and an older brother. And remember what Jesus said the father did, the good father of that parable? While he was still a long way off, this is when the younger prodigal came to himself. His father saw him and felt compassion, and he ran and embraced him and kissed him. Same thing. When Jesus started that parable, you know what he said about the young prodigal? That the young prodigal ran to another country. And what did the young prodigal do in the other country? He went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country. He became a hireling. He became under bondage. And what then happened? Can you imagine the reception of the citizen of another country? He ran, he embraced, and he kissed, but with no compassion. And I believe Jesus had this whole story of Jacob and Esau on his mind when he gave the parable of the prodigal sons to challenge Israel. You don't realize your great spiritual father was the young prodigal. And you're behaving like this older brother. But you come from this. That's another sermon. Jacob comes. This father embraces and this father kisses and he runs. And what is the very thing that Laban says when Jesus says he joins himself to a citizen of that other country? What is the very thing that Laban says when he sees him? You are bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. That's a curious thing, because that's the very thing that Adam said of his wife Eve. And it was right after Jacob told him everything. Oh, Jacob, don't feel bad about your past. We're cut from the same cloth, you and me. You are bone of my flesh. Some of you guys are really into sports, and you'll make the front row for that. But I tell you what, you got the best showdown ever right here. These are two master schemers right up next to each other. And we have a match made from heaven.
Which is, by the way, the title of this message, Match Made from Heaven, out of Genesis 29. You ever notice how sin loves company? It tends to validate the evil that we do, doesn't it? And this is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Closing out today's program, we invite you to contact us. Maybe you have a question, comment about the program. Maybe you'd like to listen to the broadcast again. Any reason at all, we'd love to hear from you, even if it's just a quick praise report saying thanks for the program. That means a great deal to us. You reach out to us at agradio.org or call 888-504-8805. Now, bear in mind, as you visit us online, again, agradio.org, that'll also provide a great jumping-off point to the other platforms that we're available on, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Again, you can jump off to any of those platforms through our website, agradio.org. If you do have a question you would like Pastor Chris to address here on the program, we would invite you to use your voice memo app on your smartphone. Record your question, your name, and where you're calling from, and then email it to us, questions@agradio.org. If we use your question on the air, we'll email you back and let you know when the program airs, so you'll be able to listen to Pastor Chris's answer again right here on Abounding Grace Radio. And then, finally, as we conclude our time today, a quick reminder that this radio broadcast airs on this station you're listening to because friends of the ministry come alongside of us prayerfully and financially. There is a financial cost to making sure that these programs continue to air here on this station. And if you would like to link arms and partner with us, become a part of this family, we would love to hear from you. Again, reach out to us at agradio.org or simply call 888-504-8805. Well, next time, here on Abounding Grace Radio, Pastor Chris will continue our look at Genesis chapter 29, a message called A Match Made from Heaven. Not necessarily a match made in heaven, but it is definitely a match made of heaven, and for good reason, as we'll see next time. here on Abounding Grace with our teacher and pastor, Chris Gordon. Until then, God bless. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.